Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Tzadi Zayin Amud Bet by the two dots. Yesterday, we brought down that Beitza B'Shishim, that a Beitza in 60 times is Batel, Vein Beitza Min HaMinyan. But the Beitza that is a Surah doesn't count towards the 60 times. You need 60 Beitzim connected to one that is a Bisur. Amalei Ravidi Baravin Labaye, the Memra de Yavatama. From that, you would assume that an egg is problematic. Because here you're saying that if you have a non-kosher egg that's mixed up with a bunch of kosher eggs, then we worry about the tam being passed from the non-kosher egg to the kosher eggs. V'amrei inche ki maya debeya ba'alma. Don't we say, or isn't it well known, that eggs are just a bunch of water inside of them? They don't give off any flavor. They don't do anything that passes tam from the eggs to the other eggs. If that's the case, then what are you worried about when you have a non-kosher egg mixed in with the kosher eggs, assuming that you know which one is the non-kosher egg? You just take it out, and everything should be mutar. Amalei, hacha b'mayaskinan. What we're dealing with over here is b'beitzat efroach. We're dealing with an egg that already has a chick developing in it. And as Rashi notes over here, now it doesn't matter whether the egg is tmeya or tehora. Doesn't matter if it's a kosher egg or a non-kosher egg, because whatever is inside of this egg is now a nevela. A dead chick inside of an egg is a nevela. So either way, you have a problem over here. Whether it's a kosher egg or a non-kosher egg, this chick needs shchita in order to be ksheira. Without that, it's going to be a nevela. If that's the case, then you have a non-kosher egg, quote-unquote, because it's not necessarily non-kosher. It could be a kosher egg, but you have an egg that's now non-kosher because it has a chick in it. And that conveys tam, flavor, to the other eggs, and that's what the problem is over here. About tamei lo. But when you're just dealing with a plain, non-kosher egg, then it's not problematic because it's maya ba'alma. It's just water. So a number of things to note over here. The first of which is, it's clear from what Chazal are saying here, and it's true scientifically as well, that the eggshells are porous, which means that they are not an absolute seal around that which is inside. There is exchange between the outside and that which is inside. It's clear here because they think that the flavor inside can pass from inside the egg to outside the egg when it's being cooked together. Assuming here, and it seems pretty clear from the Gemara that we're speaking about eggs that have shells still on them, and therefore you pass flavor through the shell to the other eggs. And the only question here is there flavor inside or is there not flavor inside? So if there's a chick inside, you have something that can convey flavor. If there's no chick inside, you have nothing that can convey flavor, and that's why it's not problematic. For instance, for people who put eggs into the cholent, you know once you put an egg into a cholent, then when you crack the egg afterwards and go inside, the egg tastes like the cholent itself. That's just evidence of the fact that these shells are porous and allow for flavor to move back and forth between them. The second thing is, as Tosafot points out, Beitzat Efroach doesn't literally have to be a chick. Going back to what we saw earlier in the Masechta, the egg has a problem, not just when there's a fully developed chick inside of it. The egg's a problem as soon as you have dam, as soon as you have blood, or something that indicates there's a development of a chick inside, that's already problematic. So you don't need a full-fledged chick, you just need to move away from it being an unfertilized egg towards a developing fertilized egg. As soon as you do that, it's going to be problematic, and that's what Tosafot discusses over here, that huadin benimtza badam, shada tichla bikula. It's also true if you have dam in there, where it goes into the yolk of the egg, and that already is an indication of a development of a chick, and that will be problematic to eat, and also be problematic in terms of conveying flavor or tam to the other eggs. And then he brings from the Yerushalmi, Tosafot says Yerushalmi makes a distinction between eggs that have shells on them to eggs that are shelled. And he says, maybe we should make that distinction as well, but our Gemara doesn't do that because generally eggs are cooked or put together with their shells on. Although it seems from our Gemara that that's not the issue over here. The issue is not about whether the shell is on or the shell is off. The simple issue is, do you have a chick? Or you don't have a chick in there. And even if you had a egg that did not have a shell on it, if it was a beitzat tameya, it's water. It doesn't convey flavor, and it may not be a problem even outside of the shell. Tosafot speculates that maybe our Gemara would agree with the Yerushalmi that there is such a distinction, but from the Gemara itself, it's not clear that that distinction exists. Eitavei, We have a Tosefta and Trumot. Beitzim Tehorot, she shall come in Beitzim Tmeot. You have Tahor, which we would assume means kosher eggs, that are cooked together with Beitzim Tmeot, we would assume means non-kosher eggs. Im Yesh Behem Benotein Tam, if there are sufficient non-kosher eggs there to give flavor, Kulan Asurot, all the eggs are problematic. Hachanami Bebetzah Tefroch. The answer again is, we're dealing with an egg of a chick and not a non-kosher egg. The Tmeot over here does not mean non-kosher until it means kosher. It means, do you have a developing chick inside, or it's an egg without a chick developing inside? Vaymai correlate tmeya. Then why is it called a tmeya? Tmeya means non-kosher eggs. Why are they saying that a chick is called a tmeya? Came in to eat by a froch, korelo tmeya. That's exactly why it's called tmeya, because it has a chick inside of it. So even a kosher egg that has a chick inside of it is tmeya, because it causes the same problem that a non-kosher egg contributes. And therefore, they use the term tmeya to describe an egg that has a chick in it, even if it's a kosher egg that has that chick inside of it. V'amiktani seifa. What about the latter half of that braita that says, Beitzin shishokan, they cooked a bunch of eggs together, v'nimtza efroch be'achat mehem, and then you find a chick in one of those eggs. If yesh behem benotein tam, again, if that is big enough in order to contribute tam to the other eggs, kulan asurot michlal, from the seifa that it's speaking about a case of a chick, the ratio late by a froch askinon. The fact that the Seif explicitly mentions a chick makes it sound like the ratio was not speaking about a case of a chick. Mar says, no problem. Perushe kamifarish. The latter half of the Braita is explaining what was the case in the earlier part of the Braita. Beitzim tohorot sheshokam in beitzim tmeot. When you have kosher eggs together with non-kosher eggs, I'm putting in quotations. Im yesh behem benotein tam kulan asurot. Keitzad. What is the scenario about these kosher and non-kosher eggs? Kagon, shishalkan, v'nimtzai efroach, v'achat mehen. That's the situation here. It's where you cook the eggs and then you find one of them has a chick in it. Hachanami mistabra. It makes sense to read the Tosefta that way. Disagadatcha resha, delayed by efroach. If you think that the resha is speaking about a case where there's no chick inside, hashtat late ba, efroach, asura. If in the case where there's no chick inside, you say that it makes all the eggs asurot, to eat by a froach, mi boy, then you have to tell me about the case where there is a chick inside. It's obvious that if without a chick it's problematic, then certainly with a chick it's going to be problematic. So why do you need to give me both cases? Where it says, imi shumha, if that's your only logical reason, lo iria, that's not proof. Tana seifa legluye resha. The seifa, the Tosefta, comes to tell you about the resha. Shalo tomar. So you wouldn't say resha deed by a froach. Had you only had the resha, you would have just assumed the resha is being made a case where there's a chick inside. Avalit by a froach, sharia. But without a chick, it would have been totally mutar. So tana seifa. Therefore, we bring the second half of the Tosefta, deed by a froach, to teach you that this is the case of a chick, and therefore implying miklal the resha late by a froach, to teach you that the resha is a case where there is no efroach inside it. And despite that fact that it is asur, so just because of the structure of the Braita, you cannot automatically conclude that the structure of the Braita forces you to say that the Seifa is explaining the Reisha, because you could give explanation for why, even though once you have the Reisha, the Seifa is obvious, is because you need the Seifa to tell you what the case of the Reisha is. Once you know the Seifa is an Efroach, then you know the Reisha is not an Efroach, and then you could learn the Din. But that in itself would not compel you to say that the Reisha is speaking about an Efroach. Despite that, we have to explain that the Reisha is speaking about an Efroach, because otherwise we don't understand what the problem is, because non-kosher eggs in of themselves don't create a problem when they're cooked with something else, because it's maya ba'alma, it's just water. It's nothing that conveys flavor, conveys anything to the other eggs that are there. So therefore we have to explain the Braita as a case of Efroach. And in doing so, we have to combine the Reisha and Seifa and say that the Reisha gives the case. The Seifa explains what the case was in the Reisha. Reisha explains to you the issue, and the Seifa says that the issue derives from the fact that it is a Beitzat Efroach. Tosfot over here just happens to note that the Gemara, in some places in Chas, is unwilling to accept this type of consolidation of a Mishnah, right, to take the Reisha and Seifa and make them into one case. Because the Reisha says Asurot, and the Seifa says Asurot. If you're right that it's all one big case, why write Asurot twice? You could have written it once, because there's only one case in the Braita. So Tosfos points out that sometimes the Gemara doesn't like that and brings that up as a question. In other instances, the Gemara lets that slide. Like in our case, even though it says Asarot and the Reish and Seifa, it lets it slide. Over here, Bali Tosfos don't really explain it, but you can see there in the Torah Shas, he tells you take a look at the Tosfot in Bechorot, where there he lists all the cases or situations where the Gemara does it and doesn't do it. And over there, Tosfot just, in the end, says when the Gemara doesn't like the way that the explanation is going, it will invoke that in order to overturn it. If the Gemara is okay with the explanation, then it won't invoke that problem in order to overturn it. So Tosfot says in the end, it really is somewhat random, because you don't have a consistent policy of the Gemara, whether you do or don't question from that. It's just that when the Gemara feels that that's a plausible explanation of the Braita, it doesn't ask the question. So in our case, they think that is a plausible explanation. When they think the explanation is implausible, then they bring that up as just an additional item to show you that that can't be the way to explain this Braita. So now we move on to another area of Isur V'Heter, which is how kazeita tarbo denafal b'dikula debisra. You have a kazait worth of chelev, chelev that is problematic, that falls into a dikula of bisra. So bisra means into meat. So it's obvious the problem here is that you have chelev then going into the meat, which is going to flavor the meat and cause you a problem. The word bidikula is very difficult over here. In general, the shorish of the word dikula is dekel, which would be a palm tree. And it's used in other places in Shas to reference to a basket. And that doesn't make so much sense in our situation over here. What does it mean that the chelev fell into a basket full of meat? Obviously, we're speaking about meat that is hot or being heated up. Otherwise, the fats or the chelev that's going in there is not going to make a difference in terms of tam. In order for the tam to move through the basar, you need heat. That's the mechanism for moving flavor. So why would you be heating up a basket over the fire with meat in it? Doesn't make so much sense. Rashi therefore translates the word over here, dikula, to mean a kalachat, which is a pot, or really a cauldron. It's a very large pot. And so Rashi translates this dikula to mean a seer, a cauldron. Tosfot over here quotes reasons for why that it was considered to be a dikula. The quotes from Rashi and other places in Shas, who says that the dikula is really a kalachat, and the reason they call it a dikula is because of the bubbling up, the boiling that comes up in the pot, because the ritichut, the heat that comes up, is called dikule. That's the word that's used for bubbles that come up or heat that rises through a pot. It's called a dikule. And so a dikula is a utensil that creates these dikule. So Rav Tosfot quotes Rashi from other places in Shas that explains it in that manner, which would then help understand why that is the case over here. He also quotes from the Tshuvat HaGeonim, and also from the Oroch, who suggests that the Dikula was called that because it was a cauldron that had a Shi'ur Dikula, that had the amount of volume that it could fit in it that was in a Dikula, whether Dikula means a palm tree's worth, or it means a basket's worth. Meaning it's giving you the size of the pot rather than the name of the pot itself. Or the Ramban over here speculates that Rashi was forced to say Dikula over here is not a basket and a pot, because Rashi, the Shittato, who believes that Min B'mino is not Batel. And therefore Rashi has a problem here, because Chelev and Basar are Min B'mino. And if meat and vino are not batel, then what's the whole sugya dealing with over here with fats inside of meat? And therefore, he actually needs something that will contain the liquids as well, the gravy as well. If it was in a basket, the gravy would drip out. And there'd be nothing there of het there that would help you out. On the other hand, if you have a pot instead of a basket, that will trap the liquids inside. And that means now you have stuff that's not min bimino. And that would allow for the bitul to take place according to Shita Rashi. So that's a speculation by the Ramban trying to explain why Rashi in other places says it's a basket and over here says it is a pot. Alright, Savar Rav Asi, or we have an alternate gear, so is Rav Ashi, Lishurei B'mai Debala Dikula. He wanted to measure it also with that which was absorbed into the pot. So he was saying, listen, we have here Isur of Chelev. We have heter of basar, but the heter of basar is shrunk now because it started out at a larger amount, and now that it's been cooking in the pot, it's shrunk. Not from that which is evaporated, or that is which is dehydrated. That's not what we're speaking about. We're speaking about the fact that the pot itself absorbed from some of the heter that's there. So what he wanted to do was allow for that heter that was absorbed into the pot to be added back into the calculation of heter. That's what we saw yesterday, that there was a question with regards to kedera. How does kedera contribute towards the bittul? And the Gemara had two options, either the whole kedera or that which the kedera absorbed. So that's what Rav Ashi is saying over here. It's that which the kedera absorbed should be now put back into the calculation. Amarle Rabbonon the Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says it means the Talmidim. The students there said to Rav Ashi, Atu de etera bola di sura lo bola. You're telling me that the pot absorbs only heter. It doesn't absorb that which is isur. Meaning that whatever the ratio is between the isur and the heter right now, that was also the relative ratios beforehand. And then some of both of them was absorbed into the pot. So whatever is missing now from the heter, on a ratio basis, is also missing from the isur. Therefore, you could ignore that which is in the pot, because it will only serve to give you the same ratio as what you have right now. That's what Rashi said yesterday, when we quoted Rashi, that Rashi said, we don't paskin like either of those shitot before. We paskin the chumrah because it's a din d'oraita. Therefore, we would have said it's only that which is in the walls, not the whole pot. But even that, he says, we don't do because of this position here of the Talmidim of Rav Ashi, or the other Rabbanan that argued on Rav Ashi and said that there's no reason to worry about what's in the walls because whatever's in the walls is on a ratio basis, and therefore you don't need to add it back in. You're not going to get any different outcome. Palga de Zeta de Tarba de Nafalba de Kula de Bisra. Now you have a half kezayit of fats that fell into a pot full of basar. So again here, it's a similar case, only here there wasn't a kezayit, but rather a chatzi kezayit. Savar mar baravashi de shi'urei bitlatin palge de zeta. Mar baravashi, Ravashi's son, thought maybe we should only do it with 30 half zeitim to offset it. Basically a ratio of 30 to 1, rather than your standard 60 to 1 that we'd use for bitl. Amalei Avua, so his father, meaning Rav Ashi, says to him, Lava minalecha, haven't I already told you? Lotid the zel zel bishi'urim de Rabbanan. Don't be so flippant about shi'urim of the Rabbanan. Now that's from two perspectives. One perspective is 60 to 1 is the shi'ur de Rabbanan, not 30 to 1. And number two is kezayit, which is a shi'ur that the Rabbanan tell us is the minimum shi'ur to be chayav for, even though here you have half a kezayit, the Rabbanan still say it's problematic. If they say it's problematic, then you need to deal with it in a full manner. Ve'od. And on top of that, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, chatzi shiur asur min haTorah. Over here you see the stama, the Gemara, paskening like Rabbi Yochanan in the Machloket, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, in the beginning of the last perek in Yoma, where they argue about whether chatzi shiur is min haTorah, or is chatzi shiur only mi derabbanan. So Rabbi Yochanan is of the position that we learned out from Kol Chalev, that not only is a kezayit asur, but even less than a kezayit is asur, you just don't get malkot for it. You're not going to get a penalty for it, but it's still asur, and it has a problem of what's called chazei litzterufe. It has the capacity to add up to a shiur that would be problematic, and it's asur min haTorah. And he says, then, once I bring that in, and we pass it like Rabbi Yochanan, not only are you being mezalzel b'shiurim derabbanan, this is really an issue deoraita. A half kezayit is no different than a kezayit. One gets you malkot, one doesn't get you malkot, but they're both asurim in a Torah. You need 60 to 1 for a kezayit, you're going to need 60 to 1 for a half kezayit as well. And you can't be mezalzel in these issues. From here you see two important points, one of which is that the issue of chatzi shiur asurim in a Torah is not only an issue of extant chatzi shiur is problematic, but it has the same character traits as a shiur min haTorah, which means just like a shiur min haTorah can convey tam and can make other things asur, so too can a chatzi zayit over here make other things asurim, even though it's a chatzi kezayit. It's asur min haTorah. That isur min haTorah makes it that it has the same properties and something that is a full shiur, and that means now we can convey tam that's going to be problematic to other things. Otherwise, you could have just said, okay, chatzi shiur min haTorah is asur, but it doesn't convey any tam. It doesn't have the ability to give over that isur to other things. Chatzi shiur may not inherently be asur.
It just might be because it's chazilitz terufe that it is asur. A problem to eat it because of what it could bring to. If you say that, then if it's not inherently asur, then the flavor that it gives off would not be problematic. That's what the Gemara is mechadesh over here, that there is flavor, and it is inherently problematic to the point where it gives off flavor. But you could have had a havamina to say otherwise. From here you see that it does have that capacity. It also does teach you that the problem has to be a chatzi shiur asur min haTorah, which differentiates it from what's called a ti'ima, a taster, which is that if you taste something, you put something on the tip of your tongue, technically it's not asur min haTorah. The Rabbanon don't allow you to do that because you might come to swallow it, you might come to eat it. But technically a ti'ima is not considered to be achila. Here you need a chatzi shiur in order to be chayav. You can't just do a ti'ima in order to be chayav. That does have implications, halacha. In general, it won't help you out because we won't allow you to do it if it's an isor. So that can't help you to determine whether it's tamen here or not in tamen here. And that's why we have to use the kfela. We have to use the non-Jew. But it does come up with cooking on Erev Shabbat. If the person who's preparing for Shabbat wants to taste to make sure that the item is flavored properly, but they don't want to become fleishik somewhere in the middle of Friday afternoon or even Friday morning, if they just put a tip of it on the tongue and they do not follow it, they just spit it out. If they do a ti'ima, you don't become fleishik from a ti'ima. And therefore you can taste the food to make sure that it's spiced properly without becoming fleishik. But that's the difference between a ti'ima versus a chatzi shiur, where a chatzi shiur gives you all of the properties of whatever a full shiur would give you, whereas a ti'ima doesn't. Amar Rav Shemen bar Abba, Amar Rav Idi bar Idi, interesting name. He was named after his father. Question of whether his father had predeceased his birth, or whether they named after fathers in that time, and it wasn't an issue. Bar Gershom, Amar Levi bar Barta, Amar Rabbi Nochum, Amar Rabbi Birayim, Mishum Zaken Echad, V'Rabbi Yaakov Shemei. So you have a very long list of individuals who are involved in this Misora. The Bei Nesia Amru, from the house of the Nasi, they say, Beitza B'Samech Asura. If you have an egg with 60, it's problematic. B'Samech V'Achat, with 61, Muteret, then it is fine. You could read this one of two ways, and that's exactly the problem, which is, Beitza B'Samech, and Beitza with 60, does that include the egg, or does that not include the egg that's problematic? If it includes the egg that's problematic, then that really means 59-1, which is Beitza B'Samech, means that a Beitza with a total of 60, that means you have 60 including the one that's problematic, 59-1, that's a surah. B'Samech V'Achat, 61 including the Isur, that gives you 62-1 is Muteret. That's one way you could read it. Or you could read it, Beitza B'Samech. The non-kosher egg together with 60 is asura. B'samach v'achat, that same beitza with 61 besides it is muteret. So that's really the question over here. What does the statement mean? Does the statement mean that you need 61 to be kasher, or does it need to be 61-1 to be kasher? Now he doesn't explain it. Since he doesn't explain it, we're going to assume likula, that you take the lower of the two thresholds. And that's what people who heard him are going to say. And that's what Amar Rabbi Zera, the Rabbi Shemin Bar Abba. Rabbi Zera says to Rabbi Shemin Bar Abba, who brought this Mesorah down, Ra'ei, she'atam meitil ba'givul heter. You are just speaking without giving any qualification to your statement, which implies that people are going to take it litzad kula. You speak to a bunch of people and you give this. If you're going to interpret it both ways, you know people are going to interpret it the kula. So if you're saying it without any qualification, it means that you must believe that it means 60-1 is okay. Sharei shnei gdolei ador lo pirshu et davar. They had the same Mesorah, but they did not do what you did. And those two gdolei ador are Rav Yaakov bar Idi, Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani, Tarvayu mishmei de Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Both of them said it over in the name of Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Amrei, beitza b'sama chasura, an egg with 60 is problematic. B'samach v'achat, muteret. And with 61 is muteret. Ve'ibayilahu. And then when they brought that Mesorah down, they posed the following question. B'samach v'achat ba'adei dida. Is it 61 including the egg, which means 62-1? O dilma the barmina. Or maybe it is besides that egg, which means you need 61-1 in order to be heter. Ve'lo pashit.
and they never came to a conclusion. Umar Pashit Lamifshat. And you have no problem. You don't qualify your statement. So that implies that you think that it must mean 60 to 1 and not 61 to 1. How come? Why is it that you have no qualification of your statement? Implied in that is that he believes that 60 to 1 would have been sufficient. The Baal HaHayyot Tosafot say don't go too far, because they say, Midlo perish behedja, b'shishim v'hi muteret leka l'mifshat. Says, he never explicitly says that. He just doesn't qualify his statement, so we're making an assumption about his statement. Like Rashi says, if you're dashing in front of the Ami Haaretz, then they're going to come to this conclusion that it means 60 to 1, so that must mean what you mean. But Tosafot says, take it easy, don't come to any conclusions over here, because it's very possible that's not what he meant, but he was just criticizing him for not at least bringing up the issue when others did bring up the issue. Itmar, Amar Rabbi Chelba, Amar Rabbi Huna. So now we have a conclusive statement. Beitza b'samech v'hi asura. If you have a beitza with 60 and it is asura. B'samech v'achat v'hi, 61 and it, muteret. Which actually means now you need 61 to 1 by eggs in order to be matir them. 60 to 1 does not work. The ratio of 60 to 1, which works everywhere else in the Torah, for Isurim, by eggs, you need 61 to 1. There is an additional chumrah by eggs. You could have argued that this is something that is a statement of fact by eggs, but applies to everything else. But the Rishonim do not say that. The Rishonim say that it's particular to eggs, and that's because of a problem that is unique to eggs, and that is the fact that eggs come in different sizes. There's no standard sized egg, and therefore when you say 60 to 1, if you bring in 60 times 60 eggs versus one egg, that doesn't really mean you have 60 to 1 in volume. So in order to ensure that you really have 60 to 1 in volume, they insisted that you have one extra egg in there just to be sure that the size differences are accounted for. So that's the reasoning brought by many of the Rishonim. The Rambam, on the other hand, says that the reason is because of Beitzat Efroach. Because of the flavoring that comes from something that's inside the egg, that Beitzat Efroach has a tam that spreads, and therefore it needs more to offset it in the Beitzat Efroach. So that was the Rambam's view over here, that there's something unique about a Beitzat Efroach. In terms of being Mevatel, the Ramah brings down the Halacha that the bitul of these eggs works in the following manner. The eggs themselves that are not problematic count towards it. The egg shells of those eggs that are not problematic, as well as the egg shells of the things that are tmeim. All of that counts towards the heter tmeim vatel over here in terms of the calculation of 61 to 1. So that we saw yesterday as well, like with the chal, that the item that contributes towards this 60 to 1, or over here the 61 to 1, is not just the egg itself, or the problem itself, but even the shells and everything else that's accompanied over there, and even the shells of that which is problematic, all of those contribute towards the 61 to 1 in this instance. Now, how would the Ate the Kamei de Rabbi Gamliel by Rabbi? Rabbi had a number of children. We're going to see two of them mentioned here today. One of them is Rabbi Gamliel by Rabbi. Amalei Abba Lushir by Arbaim Besheva. My father wasn't willing to do this with 47. And I'm not going to do this with 45. There are two ways to read this Gemara. Rashi brings both of them down. I read it the first way, which is to me the more pashut way to read it, and seems to me the way that the Gemara flows. And then I'll bring you the other version in Rashi, which is actually the first version that Rashi brings. Over here, we're assuming that you have a kazayit of chelev that fell into basar, even if it's less than a kazayit, meaning that something happened over here, and there's ratio that exists over here, is a ratio of 45 to 1. And what Rabbi Gamliel by Rabbi says is, my father saw a case like this, and he had 47 to 1. And in a ratio of 47 to 1, he was unwilling to be matir. We only have a ratio of 45 to 1. You want me to be matir in that case? There's no way I'm going to be matir. That's just not a high enough number. What seems clear from here is that the standard of shishim wasn't necessarily in place or well established at this point, because they're speaking about numbers as if they don't have a fixed number that they're after. It's just 47 was clearly not enough. So he says, my 45 is not going to make it. How to the command to Rabbi Shimon Barabi? So the other son of Rabbi, Rabbi Shimon, Amalei Abba Lo Shir B'mem Hey, my father was unwilling to be matir with 45 to 1, Vani Asher B'mem Gimel, and the case we have here is 43 to 1, so I'm certainly not going to be matir in this case. How datel kamei de Rabbi Chia? Now you have a third case who's a Talmid of Rabbi. I mean, they're all Talmidim of Rabbi. Two of them are his sons. And then you have Rabbi Chia, who's also a Talmid of Rabbi. Amalei klom yesh shloshim. Is there even 30 times in this situation over here? Taima deleka shloshim. It's only because there's not 30 times. Ha'ika shloshim misha arinan. So that implies that had there been 30 times, Rabbi Chia would have been fine in terms of being mevato, the item. Which seems a little strange. Where it says, Rabbi Chanina kuzma. It was just an exaggeration. He wasn't saying, oh, we don't have 30 here, implying that if we had 30, it would be enough. He's saying that we don't even have 30 over here. Forget about even making it to 60 or the number that you need. We don't even get to 30. We're so far off that it's not even a question of being mevatel. I mean, 30 would be half of what you needed. And we're not even at the halfway point. That's what he's making as a statement. So that's one way to read the Gemara. Rashi picks an alternate way to read the Gemara, which is that there was a maise that came before Rabbi, that it was a case of a half kazayit in chelef, and Rabbi was matir in this case. And so what happened over here was, he says, my father Rabbi, with 47-1, was matir, v'ani asher v'arbim chamesh, and I'm even willing to be makil and be matir by 45-1. And the same thing with Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi. My father was willing to do it at 45-1, I'm even willing to do it at 43-1. Against what we saw before, that Rav Ashi was criticizing his son for, over here you seem to have Tanaim that are willing to be Mekil by a Chatzi Shiur and say that it is Batel, even with less than 60-1 as being the ratio. So that's the alternate way to read it. Although again, I think it flows better the other way because of the situation with Rabbi Chia, because then otherwise how do you explain the Gemara is saying Derek Kuzma by Rabbi Chia? If you believe it's mutar, then Rabbi Chia would be not saying the same thing, but rather than arguing on the previous two cases, in the answer that Rabbi Chanina gives. The Gemara first thinks that he's corroborating it and saying 30 would be enough. The Gemara says, no, Derek Kuzma is not corroborating. But that would mean that he's then against the psak of Rabbi Gamliel Barabi and Rabbi Shimon Barabi, which would be a little strange. So that's why I read it the other way first, which is we're speaking about a full kazayit, and they were unwilling to be matir at these numbers. Right. Amar Rabbi Chia Baraba, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Mishum Bar Kapara, Kol Isurim Shibetorah Besamach. All Isurim in the Torah are batel at 60-1. The Bali Tosafot back on Sadi Zayin Amud Aleph quote this in favor of the position of the Rabbeinu Tam that Bitul of Samach applies both to Min She'enu Mino, as well as min vimino. And this is one of their points of proof, which is here you have Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi saying that 60 times works, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi carries a lot of weight in the halacha. Amar lefanav Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi atah omer kein? Says to him, Rabbi, do you really say that? Halki amar Rabbi Asi, amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi mishum bar kapara. We have a different mesorah. Rabbi Chir Baba brings this Mesorah that he's now being questioned by Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, and he says, we have an alternate Mesorah from Rabbi Asi, who also brings from Yeshua ben Levi and ben name of Bar Kapara, Kol Yisurim Shibetorah B'meya. All Yisurim in the Torah, it's 100-1, not 60-1. Ushneem lo lamdua ela mizroa b'sheila. And they both learn it out from a Korban of the Nazir, which is the El Nazir, or the Shalmei Nazir. They learn it out from it. We're going to, in a second, read about this. But there's a very important Rashi over here. Rashi says over here, with regards to the din of 60-1, and it would be true, I guess, of the 100-1 as well. Rashi says over here, Heved bat kinei velo yohiv taima. In a case where he checked it out, and it doesn't give over any flavor. Inami, leka the mekam ataima. Or in a case where we can't figure out the tam, like a case of min vino. Aval heched de ban kine, in a case where we checked it, v'yayiv taima, and it gives over flavor, lo olam tama lo batil. Tayam doesn't go away. It does not matter. So Rashi over here makes an important statement, which is, you need both no tam and 60-1 for something to be het there. Rashi over here says that tam is so powerful that once you reach 60-1, it won't be enough to overcome the tam. So for instance, if you have a goy taste something and he tells you there's no flavor over here, that in of itself is not enough. Because v'chilo yoiv taima be'in and shishin libitule. Even if he tells you there's no tam there, you still need 62-1 in order to be mevatel. And vice versa. If the goy tastes it and he says there's flavor in there, even if you have 60-1, it doesn't help you. So for Rashi, you need both things to be true in order for it to work. You need to have it both be 60-1, as well as not be giving over a flavor. If it gives over a flavor, it's a problem automatically. If it doesn't give over a flavor, that doesn't automatically mean it's okay. You still need 60-1 in order to overcome the problem. That's Rashi the Shita Tov. The Balei Tosafot argue on that right here. He says, Ferish Bakuchis, Ta'afkiloi Taima by Shishim. Even in cases where there's no flavor, you had the goy taste it, and it's not giving over any flavor, you need 60 times. Ve'ein Nira. And Tosafot says, I don't think that's correct. And I'll explain that to you on Sadi Ten Amud Aleph when we get to the Gemara, and I'll show you how to explain the Gemara differently than Rashi did over here. So we'll leave it for there also for Tzadik Ted Amud Aleph. We'll get to that in tomorrow's daf. But it's a fundamental argument here between Rashi and the Balei Tosafot as to whether 60-1 is an absolute necessity. That's the view of Rashi. If you don't have 60-1, there's nothing to discuss. Versus the Balei Tosafot say that the 60-1 is a proxy for flavor. Meaning that when you can't figure out the flavor, 60-1 does that job for you. But if you already know there's no flavor there, like you had to go and taste it, then you don't need the 60-1. You've got what you wanted. There's no flavor in there. So Tosafot sees them as being mechanisms to do the same thing. Therefore, you need one or the other in order for it to be mutar. Whereas Rashi sees both of them as being an absolute requirement, and not that one is a proxy for the other. And therefore, Rashi requires both no flavor and 60-1 in order for it to be batel. Now, the Gemara says that this machloket as to whether 60-1 is the ratio of bittul or 100-1 is the ratio of bittul, that stems from the Eila Nazir. Because the Pasuk says, Lakacha Kohen et Azroa Bishela. One of the Matnot Kiuna that comes out of a El Nazir, that is in addition to the normal Matanot that a Kohen gets from a Shlamim, is the Zroa, is the foreleg of the animal. That foreleg is given to the Kohen after the Tnufa, the wave offering is done with it, plus the normal gifts of the Shlamim that goes to the Kohen. The Pasuk, when it's describing it, says the Kohen will take Zroa Bishela, Vitanya. And we have a Braita, Bishela. What is the meaning of the word Bishela? Now, truthfully, the shortage of the word is Bashel, that it's cooked. There is a requirement to cook the El Nazir in the Azara, and that's why they had a special cooking area where they would cut the hair of the Nazir, put it in the fire that was under the cauldron, and cook the Basar there. And the Kohen would get the Zroa Bishela. We get the Zroa from that cooked Shlamim. But the Gemara over here says, Ein Bishela Ela Shlema. The word Bishela in this instance means a whole item, a Shlema, and does not mean what you thought. Rashi says, Lo Nitparesh Beze Lashon. Says, I'm not sure how that works exactly. I'm not sure why Bishela means Shlema. So Rashi throws his hands up and says, I don't understand the Drash. The Balei Tosafot bring a speculation that it's possible that Bishela, if you did spell it with a Lamed Digusha, a Dagesh in the Lamed, and a Hey Digusha, and a Dagesh in the Hey, that would change the meaning of the word. Because when you put a Dagesh in the Lamed, that's, as Rashi says in Chumash, in many places, when you have a duplication of a letter, so for instance, in a word that the Lamed should have been repeated twice, you put a Dagesh in the Lamed, and then make it one Lamed. Instead of putting two Lameds, a lamed with a geish is the equivalent of two lameds. So Rashi says that many times in the conjugation of verbs, where you would get a duplication of a letter, we leave out that duplication and put it in the geish. So if you put in a geish in the lamed, that's as if there should be two lameds there. If you put in a geish in the hay, it makes it a mafik hay. Once you do that, it's as if it was written, bishel la, in it. So zroa, bishel la. The zroa in it. It meaning the aisle or the whole animal. And that's what it means, shlema over here. That's the speculation of Tosafot. There are others who try to explain it, but none of them are so compelling. The Gemara just takes it as a given, and we don't really have a good explanation for it, that bishela means in shlema. So that's the view of the Tanakhama. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, en bishela elish nitbashla ima ayol. Bishela means that it was cooked together with the ayol. So the Gemara is going to explain exactly what's going on here. But the problem is that the fourth leg of the animal that belongs to the Kohen is asur for Israel to eat it, and it must be eaten by the Kohen. And if it was to flavor something that belonged to the Israel, then that item that belonged to the Israel, which is the remainder of the Shlamim, then would have to be eaten by a Kohen and not by Israel. Yet we see here, you're allowed to cook the Zroah together with the Shlamim. So that means that something's going on over here that's not normal. Normally we would not allow you to put something that conveys flavor to another item together because it would influence the other item, and then the other item would be bound by the rules of that item. So over here, if you're cooking the foreleg that belongs to the Kohen with the whole Shlamim, that would then influence its flavor of the whole Shlamim, and then the Shlamim would have to all go to the Kohen rather than to the Baalim. So now the Gemara explains this machlok between them. According to the first version of the explanation here, everybody agrees you have to cook the Zroah together with the ayo. And as Tosfot points out, put it together because they mikra yotzei midei pshuto. That's the pashtut of pasuk, that they're cooked together. Mar savar, one of them says, mechatechla v'hader mevashala. You cut it off first, and then you cook it. Umar savar, mevashala v'hader mechatechla. That you cook it, and then you only cut it off afterwards. So here there's a machloke between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon, and we have not clarified which opinion is according to which of the two options that we have in the Gemara. The two options are now, either you cook the animal together with the leg on it, and then afterwards you cut it off, or you cut it off first, and then cook it together with the animal. So if you had to read this in a simple way, and this is the way the Bali Ayat Tosfot read it, and they do this against Rashi's view over here, because then it's consistent with the next series that we're going to bring in the Gemara. Because the next series in the Gemara also brings two options, and in the next series in the Gemara, it's clear that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is the first option, and the Tanna Kamma is the second option. So if you keep it parallel, which Tosafot says the Gemara does in general in different places, then in the first instance, you would also believe that the first case is Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and the second case is the Tanna Kamma. And that would mean that Mar Savar, Mechatechla v'Hadar Mevashala, you cut it off first, and then you cook it together. That's the view of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. And to me, it fits better into the wording because Shimon bar Yochai says that you put it together with the ayo. He doesn't say that you have to do it whole or as a single entity. He just simply says you put it together with the ayo. So you cut it off and then you cook it together with the ayo. Mar Savar, which is the Tanna Kamma, says you have to cook it first and then only cut it off afterwards because he requires it be shlema, that it be totally whole without anything taken off of it, without anything removed from it. The deficit or the problem in that explanation is that the word shlema then in the first version versus the second version is different. Over here we're saying that shlema means whole without anything broken off of it. In the second explanation we're going to see in a second, you're going to have to explain that shlema means one piece cut off, not into multiple pieces. And that's the way Rashi explains the ratio now. Rashi's explanation is the following. The first mar savar is a reference to the Tanna Kamma. The Tanna Kamma says you cut it off, and then you cook it. Because shlema doesn't mean it has to be one entity and all whole. It just means it needs to be all together. You can make one cut to take off the zroah. You can't cut it up into many pieces. And then you just cook it together. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, according to Rashi, is Mevashala v'hadar mechatechla. He says you do it together with the ayo means you do it attached to the ayo. It's got to be all together and then only cut it off afterwards. So that's the way the Rashi reads it. V'ibayitema. And some say that this is the machloket between them, and here Rashi and Tosafot agree with the explanation. The kuliyama mikatechla v'adar mevashala. Everybody agrees that you cut it off first and then you cook it. Miu mar savar b'hade ayo mevashala. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai believes that you have to cook it together with the ayo. Even though you have to cut it off already, you need to put it together with the ayo. Umar savar b'gdera acheret mevashala. And the Tanna Kamma believes that you cook it in a different kedera. You separate them completely. And as Tosafot points out, according to the second language over here, then clearly according to the Tanna Kamma, you motzei midei pshuto in order to separate away the item from the shlamim itself. So now, the word shlema, now, according to this second version, shlema means not cut up into pieces, but still means that you've cut off that one piece. So Rashi says, well, if that's its meaning in the latter part, that should be its meaning in the first half as well. And therefore, the Tanakama is going to believe that you cut it off first, both in the first explanation and the second explanation, even though that changes the order of the Mar Savar from the first explanation to the second explanation. Tosafot says, okay, the word Shlema will mean different things, but at least we'll keep it consistent that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is the first opinion in both cases, and the Tanakama is the second position in all these cases. That's the tension between them in explaining the first version. But now the Gemara gives us the explanation. The Lishna Kama, according to the first version, where they're arguing about whether you cut it off before or afterwards, Aliba the Divrei Hakol. According to everyone, we can come to this conclusion. The Lishna Batra, according to the second Lashon, Aliba the Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. You can only come to this conclusion according to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Because in the second version, according to Tana Kama, you slice it off and cook it separately. So there's no din of mixing and matching over here because they were separated before you ever cooked them. But according to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, when you cooked them together, even after it was cut, from there we can conclude. Manda amar bishishim, the one who says that it's 60 to 1. I mean the version of Rabbi Yeshua Melevi in the name of Bar Kapara that says that 60 to 1 is the bittul savar. He believes basar va'atzamot ba'de basar va'atzamot misharinan. That you look at flesh and bones versus flesh and bones. And when you do that, there's a lot of bones in the foreleg. Given that, the ratio of the remainder of the animal, of its basar and bones, to the ratio of basar and bones in the foreleg of the animal, is really only 60 to 1. Rashi says that, Kim Lahu, the Rabbonon. The Rabbonon had a mesorah of this, or they had some sort of empirical evidence to this, that ratio was 60 to 1. And the Zroa, the foreleg that we're speaking about here, Rashi clarifies, is the gift to the Kohen, which does not include the shoulder blade with it. So that's why it's smaller than we would have thought, because it doesn't include the shoulder blade. It's cut below the shoulder blade, and that's the Zroa that we're speaking about here. And if you include the bones from both the remainder of the animal and the Zroa, you'd only end up with a 60 to 1 ratio. Madamar B'meya, the one who holds that it's 100 to 1, Savar basar b'hadei basar misharinan fabile b'meya. All you look at is flesh versus flesh. On the foreleg, there's not a lot of flesh. There's a lot of bones, not a lot of flesh. Therefore, if you compare or contrast that with the remainder of the animal, the remainder of the animal has 100 times the flesh that is on the foreleg. So that's the source for these numbers. Now again, it's not an exact source because the source just says there's something unique about the Zroa in contrast to the remainder of the animal. That Zroa, in contrast to the remainder of the animal, tells me some sort of ratio by which, when you cook them together, even though the Zroa belongs to the Kohen, and the rest of the Shlamim is going to the Balim, the flavor that's given from the Zroa to the remainder of the animal is not impactful. So why isn't it impactful? That's either because there's a ratio of 60 to 1, or 100 to 1 to be mevatalit. And the question of 60 to 1 versus 100 to 1 depends on what you're counting in the ratio between the leg and the remainder of the animal. If you count it basar and atzamot, it's a ratio of 60 to 1. If you count just the basar, it's a ratio of 100 to 1. So this is the source for their positions. Now, mi yalfinan mi na. Can you really learn from the case of basar b'shela, the el nazir? Because we have a braita batanya. Zeu heter abba michlal isur. This is a heter that's affected by isur. Zeu l'mutei mai. Zeu means this is a unique case, and nowhere else do we apply it. Lav l'mutei kol isurim b'torah. It makes it sound like this is the unique case where we allow the heter to be the heter to override the isur, but it doesn't have general application. Which means that, yeah, 100 to 1 or 60 to 1, whichever one you think is the right ratio over here, is successful by the El Nazir. But that's exactly where it's successful, by the El Nazir. Nowhere else is it relevant because it says Zehu. It's only applicable here. It's not applicable anywhere else. So that's now an undermining of us bringing this as the source for this Machloket. So now we're going to have numerous answers from the Amoraim. Today we'll see two of the answers, the first of which from Abaye, and then the second one from Rava, and then we'll see tomorrow additional answers from the Amoraim. Amar Abaye lo nitzricha ela le Rabbi Yehuda, damar min bimino lo batil. Abaye says we need it for Rabbi Yehuda, who says min bimino is not ever batel.
So again, here, this seems to be an endorsement by Abaye of the position of Rabbi Yehuda that Mimino is not Batel. You could argue otherwise, but it does seem like he's endorsing it. And again, that's one of Rashi's proofs that Abaye and Rava both hold that Mimino ain't Batel, and that's why he paskins that there is no Bitol by Mimino. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that in general, Mimino is not Batel, Kamash Malon, the Hocha Batel. The case of Zroa B'Sheila is the exception. So that's what it means, Zehu. Zehu means, only in this case do we say Min Mimino Batel, we use the regular rules of Bitol, which is 60 to 1, or 100 to 1, even though in other cases that would be similar to this of Min Mimino, we would not invoke the principle. And that's why it is a Chiddush over here. The Chiddush over here is that normally Min Mimino is not Batel. Zroa B'Sheila, it is Batel. But in that way, it doesn't stop us learning from it to other areas. So, okay, in Mimino, we can't apply Bitol. But the inference we could draw is that in cases that are Min Sheino Mino, this would be the vehicle or the mechanism for Bitol, 60 to 100 to 1. Over here, it happens to work with Mimino as a wild exception. But that exception also teaches you that in cases where Bitol does apply, 60 to 1 or 100 to 1 are the ratios that you would use. And Tosfot, both here and before, says, Lav drasha gemurahi. This drasha of the 60 to 100 to 1 is not a real drasha. First of all, because otherwise you could learn certain things out of here that would be implications mean doraita. And number two is, we see that even in cases where there's no flavor in less than 61 and 100 to 1, we allow it to be heter. This is Tosafot about the shita to. And we don't require 60 to 1 or 100 to 1 in that case. And the extrapolation should only be applicable to Min Bimino as well. Because the case is Rav Shelah, according to this, is Min Bimino. And therefore, 60 to 1 or 100 to 1 should only be relevant by Min Bimino and not Min Sheino Mino, where Tom is the issue. So Tosafot says, Kimlohu, that 60 to 1 or 100 to 1 also affects Tom. But in doing that, he's basically saying that this is not a drasha gemura. The whole thing is an asmachto. And they're just pushing it on the pasuk. But once they do that, then they have to look at the implications or the ramifications of doing such. But it's still a misora that they have. And they're trying to connect this misora to a particular pasuk to be that as the derivation for this chumrah. So Gemara says, V'ligbar minei. Why isn't this become the paradigm? You have the Zroa B'Sheila that teaches you that even by Mimino there is Bitol. So why don't you say that that's a paradigm? And now everywhere, Min Bimino should be Batel. Where it says, Goli Rachmono, we have another instance of Min Bimino that tells us otherwise. The Lakach Midama Par Umidama Sayir. This is at the end of the service on Yom HaKippurim, Lifnai V'Lifnim, after the Kohen HaGadol has processed the Dama Par and the Dama Sayir. At the end, there's a machloket as to whether he mixes the Dama Par and Dama Sayir together. And then from that mixture, he puts it on the Mizbeach Hazav, he does the matnot dam on the Mizbeach Hazav. Or, when it says midama par v'dama seir, it means two different times, separately. Puts the dama par on the Mizbeach Hazav, and then the dama seir. According to the one who says that you mix them together, then tarvayu b'hadei hadadi ninu. They are mixed together, they're brought as a single entity. You pour the dama par and the dama seir into each other, you mix them up, and then you sprinkle them on the Mizbeach Hazav. Belo batle. And despite the fact that the Dama Par far exceeds the Dama Seir, we don't say that it is Mivutal. So what you learn from that is that Min Bimino, Dam and Dam, which are Min Bimino, are not Batel. Because even after you have Dama Par, which overwhelms the Dama Seir, and we say that still they remain as Dama Par and Dama Seir. That shows you that despite the overwhelming blood of the Dama Par, the Dama Seir still has a standing. Given that, you see that Min Bimino ain't Ubatil. When you have two things of the same Min, they do not nullify each other. The truth is that you could reconcile between these situations and say that the case of Par and Dama Seir, there isn't 60 to 1. Dama Par and Dama Seir are less than 60 to 1 in their ratio. Yes, it's more than Rove, but it's still not enough to reach 60 to 1 times. So maybe over there by the Dam, the reason it doesn't work is because it's less than 60 to 1. By the Zroa B'Sheila, it works because it is 60 to 1. And that would be an easy way to reconcile between them.
The Gemara sees these as being opposing positions and irreconcilable positions, but yet you could explain it that way. So the Ramban over here says, once you leave the world of Rov, or that it's not Batel Barov, then there's no room anymore to make distinctions between less than 60 and more than 60. If Rov doesn't work, then whatever the threshold is the threshold, and it doesn't matter. So the Dhamma power of the Dhamma Seir is clearly way over Rov, and should have been Batel Midoraita at that level. Once you say it's not Batel Midoraita at that level, then you can't then go on and say something else. Oh, there's a difference between 60 to 1 and less than 60 to 1. Once you're over that threshold and you say that doesn't apply or that's not relevant, then everything has to be the same after that. Or others suggest that the issue of Tom is only relevant when you're dealing with Tom. But the Dhamma Par, the Dhamma Seir, the question's not about Tom. 60 to 1 is an issue by Achila. It's not an issue by other mixtures necessarily. And therefore, by the Dhamma Par, Dhamma Seir, where the Rove would have been enough, and over there we say that the Dhamma part doesn't overwhelm the Dhamma Seir, that's the equivalent of 60 to 1 by Achila, where Tom matters. Therefore, you can't make that distinction between the Psukim. So Gemara asks the very simple question. You have two paradigms now. You have the paradigm of Zra B'Sheila that says Mimino is Batel, unlike Rav Yehuda's position. And then you have the Pasuk by Dhamma Par Dhamma Seir, which says Mimino is not Batel, like Rav Yehuda. How do you know that the Pasuk by Dhamma Par Dhamma Seir is the paradigm, and everything's learned from it, and Zra B'Sheila is the exception? Do just the opposite. Say Zra B'Sheila is the paradigm, everything is Batel, and Dhamma Par Dhamma Seir is the exception to the rule where it's not Batel. Mar says, that's not a problem. Chidishu, umichidush lo gamrina. The case of Zra B'Sheila is a chidish, and since it is a chidish, we can't learn from it. Rashi over here says the chidish is, we allow you to be mevatel and isur lechatchila. That we allow you lechatchila to cook the Zroa together with the B'Sheila. Normally, if you have Isurim that are together, you measure whether you have sufficient bitul over there to nullify the problem of Isur. But what we don't let you do is be mevatel Isur lechatchila. We don't allow you to go in and then change the Isur into Heter by knowing up front that I have 60 to 1. And therefore, now that I have 60 to 1, I'm going to cook it together and get rid of the Isur in that way. That's the Chiddush of Zra B'Sheila, that I allow you to do it lechatchila. So once it's a Chiddush, you can't extrapolate a chiddush or make that into a paradigm. Tosfot says, then once you say that it's a chiddush, why don't you say that that's what the Zehu Lahatir is? Meaning, Bevatli Nisa Lechatkila is done over here by Zerah B'Sheila, not anywhere else. And then you don't have to explain what it means, not anywhere else. So Tosfot says the Loshon Abraita that says that Mashma Michlal Davar Asur, that that's heter that comes out of something that's a sur, makes it sound like it's something about achila and not about the bitul itself. And therefore, the distinction between Zra B'Sheila and everywhere else is about the achila, not about the actual bitul, which is also a chiddush by Zra B'Sheila that doesn't apply in other places. Or you can answer that the restriction against being vatal isurim lechatchila is only a din derabbanan, it's not a din deoraita. And if you say that, then even though it's a quote-unquote chiddush here b'zroa b'sheila that we are matur it and don't impose it midrabanan because the Torah clearly says that it's okay, nevertheless, that can't be what the Braita is saying is distinct about zroa b'sheila from other things since only a din derabanan. Iochi lemeya b'samach nami lo ligmor. So then how do we learn out anything from zroa b'sheila? If it's an exception to the rule, it's a chiddush, then if we can't learn from it as a paradigm to other things to say min mibino is batel, then how do we learn 60 times and 100 times from it? Gemara says, Ata anu nekula gamrina, nechumra gamrina. It's two different issues. Because midoraita beruba batil. Since midoraita min a Torah, a rov would have been sufficient, then 60 to 1 and 100 to 1 is a chumra. The case of min bimino batel, that's a kula by zroa b'sheila. So now, if you're going to try to learn a kula and say this is a paradigm to apply to other areas, there I'm going to tell you zroa b'sheila is a chiddush. And if it's a chiddush, you can't learn from a chiddush to other areas. On the other hand, by the case of 60 to 1 and 100 to 1, that's a chumrah. That says that rov isn't enough. You need 60 times, you need 100 times in order to be mevatel it. When you have a chumrah, it's easy to learn from something, especially if it's a chiddush. If by something that you're the kula, you still need 60 to 1, 100 to 1, then certainly something that doesn't have that kula, that doesn't have that kiddush, you're going to need 60 to 1 or 100 to 1. So it can't be paradigmatic in nature for the ratio of 60 or 100 to 1. It cannot be paradigmatic in nature to teach us that min b'mino is batel. So that is the view of Abaye in explaining the Zerua b'Sheila as being the source and why it is not a problem of being paradigmatic in nature, because it's Rabbi Yehuda Shita min b'mino enu batel, and this is the exception to the rule where it is batel. That exception stays by Zerua b'Sheila and applies to nothing else because it is a chiddush. But nevertheless, we still can learn out 60 and 100 times because that's something in the Chumrah. Rova amar lo nitzrachai latam ki ikar tibikodashim asur. The reason you need to tell me that Zerua b'Sheila works is because we know that tam ki ikar by kodashim min haTorah is problematic. If you have flavor that moves from one item to another item in kodashim, that has impact as if the item itself is there, and it influences the item that absorbed from the other item, that tam. So normally we'd say tam ki ikar is problematic by kodashim. Kamash malon, the hochashori. Over here we say that it's mutar. Even though the zroa belongs to the kohen, and the remainder of the animal belongs to the Israel, that zroa's flavor when it goes into the shlamim does not make it that the shlamim can only be eaten by a kohen now. So what it's saying to you is normally tam ki ikar is problematic. The exception to the rule is Zerua b'Sheila, when we say tam ki ikar is not a problem. Rashi over here says, based on Rava's suggestion, it means that tam ki ikar is midoraita v'kodashim, and the 100 to 1 or 60 to 1 is not going to work to overcome that problem of tam ki ikar. But Zerua b'Sheila, it will work. But other than that, in kodashim, you cannot overcome the problem of tam ki ikar. Because tam ki ikar is d'oraita by kodashim. Rashi infers from that Rava's belief is that by chulin, Rava believes that tam ki ikar is not d'oraita, only midirabanan. And therefore that is Rashi's shita, as we've noted before, that Rashi believes tam ki ikar by chulin is only a din d'rabanan. And the fact that the Gemara in Pesachim brings psukim from Mishrat HaNavim by the Nazir in order to prove that there is tam ki ikar, which would also be by chulin, he says, Amorai Bashrai, came to the conclusion that that was an asmachta ba'alma. That was not the real limud. It was just an asmachta, and you don't learn from it. And Rashi explains why you can use that limud either because it's shnei ketubim b'vayim ke'achad, or we can use the limud for heter mitzaref le'isur, and therefore, it's not a real limud. And that's Rashi's shita. Tosfo takes issue with Rashi's position on 2 points. Number one, he says, is, where do you see that Rava says that tam ki ikar is going to apply by kodashim, even after you have 100 to 1 or 60 to 1? And number two is, what compels you to say that Rava believes that tam ki ikar by chulin is midorabonon and not midoraito, especially if you're explaining that the tam ki ikar over here by kodashim is even tam beyond 100 to 1 and tam beyond 60 to 1. That's like a tam koshu, and that's not a real tam. So if you believe that's where it applies by kodashim, so to say that it doesn't apply there by chulin is no chiddush. Because you say above 100 to 1 or above 60 to 1 by chulin, it's all dirabon or it doesn't apply. But you could still say that below 100 to 1 or below 60 to 1, tam ki ikar is d'oraita. And therefore the Bali and Tosafot believe that, first of all, tam ki ikar by chulin is a din d'oraita, and that Rav over here does not disagree with Rabbi Yochanan, and Mishrat Anavim that we learn out by Nazir is the source for tam ki ikar, and it applies by chulin as well. And the second thing is that tam ki ikar by kodashim only applies up to 60 to 1 or 100 to 1. And that the truth is that Berov, it would be batel. And the exception to the rule by Zerua b'Sheila is even in an instance where you don't have a rov, it is still mutar. Because who says you get even distribution of the Isser and the Heter? And even in places where the Isser is berov and not the Heter, the Torah is matirit and says that it's not a problem. And so therefore, the Heter of Zerua b'Sheila is that tam ki ikar is overridden over here. And we don't worry about it at all by Zerua b'Sheila. You don't even need a rov. Whereas by the other kodashim, you do need a rov. And then once we know 60, 101, that turns into a requirement of more than just a rov. But in that way, the Tosfot accomplishes two things. First of all, he keeps Tamki Kar by Chulin to be Dilraita. And number two, he says, by Kodoshim, the fact that Tamki Kar applies is still within the ranges of the normal Bittul everywhere else. That means that over a 60 to 1, over a 100 to 1, everybody agrees, even in Kodoshim, there's no Tamki Kar. Tamki Kar is only below the thresholds of 60 to 1 or 100 to 1, or Dilraita, below the level of Rove. So that's Tosafot's view, and he disagrees with Rashi on these two points, and therefore explains the Gemara accordingly. The Gemara asks the same question again, which is, Vidligmar Minei, why don't you use that as a precedent, Zera B'Sheila, to be a paradigm, and say that just like by Zera B'Sheila, when you have a ratio of 60 to 1 or 100 to 1, Tam Ki Kar does not apply, so too by other Kodoshim, when you have 60 to 1 or 100 to 1, it should be batel, like notar, like pigol. All of these things, if you have 60 to 100 to 1 ratios, those items should be batel. Goli rachmana gabi chatat. That's because we have a different paradigm, which is by the korban chatat that says, kol asher yigabib sara yikdash. Anything that touches it will become kodesh, meaning liot kamoa, to be similar to it. Sheim pisula. If the korban is already psula, tipasel, whatever comes into contact with it and gets flavor from it, will become pasul as well. Vim kshera, teachel kichamur sheba. And if it is kasher, meaning both korbanot are ksherim, but the flavor is passed, you eat it kichamur sheba, like the more stringent of the two. What the antecedent of the ba is over here is not clear. Rashi over here interprets ba to mean the chatat. Chamur Shabbat. When you have a chatat and a shlamim, the chatat is the more chamur than the shlamim. So a chatat can only be eaten for yom v'layla. Shlamim can be eaten shnei yamim v'layla echad. If the shlamim absorbs from the chatat, it can only be eaten like a chatat for yom v'layla. And that's what it means, kechamur Shabbat. On the other hand, Rashi in other places says, kechamur Shabbat means in both directions. Like the more chamur of both of them. Because you can have it that the chatat is more chamur than the shlamim when it's the first day of shlamim. On the first day of shlamim, the chatat and the shlamim are both mutar that day. They're both mutar that night. By the next day, the chatat is already notar. The shlamim could have been eaten. So that's chamur shabbat by the chatat. But there could be a scenario where you have a chatat that touches a shlamim on its second day. When it touches a shlamim on its second day, the chatat has the ability to eat in that day and that night. The shlamim on the second day, that's its last day. It cannot be eaten on the night after the second day. So then it would be, Chomer Sheba would be of the Shlamim. The Shlamim there then would be the Chomer, because it would have to be eaten all by daytime, not at night, whereas the Chatat would have allowed you to eat at night. That's how Rashi explains Sheba in other places, not just referencing the Chatat, but also to the Shlamim itself. And there are others who just bring in the Girsavim, and you can see it's also quotes from the Beinu Kananel, Tuchal Ke Chomer Shebehen. That would solve all your problem, because the behen would be in plural, meaning both the chatat and the shlamim. Gemara asks the same question again. My chazit digamrina meheich ligmar mehai. Why is it that the chatat is the paradigm, and therefore we say that that governs that flavor from one to the other? There is tam ki ikar by kodoshim. Why do we say that is the paradigm? Make zera b'sheila the paradigm. If zera b'sheila is the paradigm, then we should learn at least that 100 to 1 or 60 to 1 is sufficient to get rid of Tam Ki Ikar by Kodoshim and use that as the precedent or the paradigm. Where it says, Chidushu, Umichidush, Lo Gamrinan. The same answer that we gave by Abaye, we say over here as well, which is that Zera B'Sheila is a Chidush, because you allow for Bitul Lechat Chilo. Given that, you can't extrapolate from that to other areas of Alocha. Iochi Lameo Shishim Nami Loli Gamer. So then how do we learn out 100 times or 60 times from it if it's a chiddush? If it's a chiddush, you can't extrapolate to other items. Again, atiyan on the kula kegamrina, we're not trying to do a kula with regards to the 60 times and 100 times, the chumra kegamrina. That's a chumra, dimidoraita baruba batil. Because meaning that Torah, rov would have been enough to be mevatalit. The fact that we require 100 to 1 or 60 to 1, that's a chumra. So now, in a chiddush, if you require a chumra, then in normal cases, certainly we should require that chumra of 60 to 1 or 100 to 1. The Rabbeinu Tam over here wants to change the girsa from Tam Ki Ikar to Heter Mitzrayat the Isur, because the proof text that the Gemara brings
is actually the pasuk that the Gemara eventually uses for a heter mitzarif le'isur. Because the Gemara comes up with a different source for tam ki ikar, and therefore uses this for heter mitzarif le'isur. The Baal Tosafot push back against that view of the Rabbeinu Tam and say, yes, in Okanami, in the conclusion of the Gemara, this pasuk is the source for heter mitzarif le'isur. But that's only because we found a different pasuk for tam ki ikar. The Gemara originally thinks that this is the source for tam ki ikar, until it found something else, and then when it found something else, then we can use this for Hatam Mitzarif Le'Isur. The Baal Tosafot say it's the style of the Gemara many times to bring the original Pasuk, which then Bigadol tells you that Tam Ki Ikar is Mutar, even though in the end we don't learn it from this particular Pasuk, from a different Pasuk, because this would have been the source, much more explicit, had it not been for the fact that we learned Tam Ki Ikar from somewhere else. And therefore they leave the Girsa intact here that we're speaking about Tam Ki Ikar. Okay, we're going to stop here, 8 lines down on the top of Tzaditet Amud Aleph, and we'll continue with Ravina's explanation of this Braita tomorrow.